Welcome back to this week's Popcorn. Had a brief hiatus there for a couple of weeks because I was in between computers. But I'm back, and I think the first episode I'm going to do after my break is going to be actually focusing on doing a Netflix-only episode. So as I've mentioned before in previous episodes, Netflix is one of the streaming giants, and probably have a pretty fair claim to being one of the biggest sites of original content, or platforms of original content. So I think it's high time that I go ahead and do a Netflix original content-based episode. People have told me to go ahead and do a Netflix episode, and I was kind of putting it off so I could figure out which ones I wanted to talk about first, but I think there's more than enough content to just get right into it. So each time I do one of these, I'm going to pick five items, whether it's a couple movies and a show, or a couple shows and a movie, and that's what I'll recommend that week. The first one I'm going to recommend is called Eurovision Song Contest. Eurovision Song Contest came out in 2020. It's rated PG-13 and it runs 2 hours 3 minutes. This one has Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams in it. It came out in 2020, so I feel like it's one of those that either everybody was watching movies because they were quarantined, or nobody was watching that because they were watching Tiger King or whatever. So I feel like it might be one that flew under people's radar. And there might have been people who avoided it too because it's Will Ferrell. But full disclosure, I love Will Ferrell. I think he is one of the funniest comedic actors out there. There's been a few hit or miss movies he's had that have been kind of dumb, but for the most part, I really have enjoyed almost all of his movies. So he's a pretty safe bet when I feel like watching something funny. So in this one, him and Rachel McAdams play lifelong best friends who've been singing together and writing music together because they want to win this Eurovision Song Contest. It's not a musical per se, but they do sing a couple of times in the film. For those who might be wondering, it is actually Will Ferrell singing. Rachel McAdams' voice is dubbed in by someone else, but it is actually Will Ferrell singing. And it's a spoof movie, obviously, because they're kind of making fun of themselves. The movie itself is poking fun at them trying to become serious singers. But like I said, I think Will Ferrell's very funny. This movie has a lot of humorous moments, and it's definitely a step up from some of his, like Blades of Glory. That one's just okay. It's not necessarily super rewatchable. But this one I've watched a couple times since 2020. The next movie I'm going to talk about is one I just watched about 2 weeks ago called What Happened to Monday. What Happened to Monday is a sci-fi thriller that came out in 2017. It's rated TVMA and also has a runtime of about 2 hours. This one stars Noomi Rapace, Glenn Close, and Willem Dafoe. This is a movie that actually flew completely under my radar. I hadn't heard anything about it. I don't even remember seeing a preview. And it was all the way back in 2017. So anyway, I came across it a couple of weeks ago, added it to my Netflix queue, and then watched it. And I thought it was very good. I will say the main storyline is not altogether completely unique because it has kind of been done before. It's 100 years into the future or so, and it has that dystopian aftermath of world collapse society. And we've seen that done many times before. The government has instituted a one-child law. And I will just say that seems a bit ironic because in China, that's actually a real thing. So that's not really science fiction. That part was a little strange. But if you're talking about Western civilization, obviously that would be more of a futuristic sci-fi element. So that's kind of where they went with it. So you're only supposed to have one child. No siblings are allowed in this futuristic society. Willem Dafoe's character has a daughter, but they don't ever show her. They just speak of her in reference in the beginning of the film. And she's had 7 babies. She dies, and the children are left to Willem Dafoe to take care of. So he's asked what he's going to name them, and he says there's 7 days in a week. So he names them all after days of the week. So there's 7 siblings, all girls raised together in secret. So when they grow up, they have to figure out how to go out into society one day at a time. Each girl gets 1 day, and they go and they all have to pretend to be this same alter ego so they don't get caught. Obviously, the film's premise is that they do get caught and have to figure out how to escape, and they have to outmaneuver the government and the Child Allocation Bureau. So what stood out to me in this film is, like I said, even though the sci-fi element and the storyline itself was not something that's never been done before, it was interesting. And Noomi Rapace does a really good job playing 7 different characters here. Obviously, hair and makeup department can come in and make her character in the film look like 7 different versions of the same sister. So they do things with her hair and her makeup and things to make her look different. But I like that she really didn't phone this in. So instead of her just being a carbon copy twin sister 7 different ways, she really did something a little bit different with each character, with her voice inflection, with her mannerisms, and how she was doing stuff. And I thought, wow, that's really notable. when you have one person carrying that much of the weight of the film, it really makes a difference in how they play it. And I think she did a really good job of making each sister seem like they actually were a different person. That was pretty impressive. The next movie I'm going to talk about is called Hillbilly Elegy. I'm moving to this one next because this one also has Glenn Close in it. She has a much bigger role in this film. The film stars Glenn Close and Amy Adams as the main characters. This film is rated R. It ran for an hour and 56 minutes, and it also came out in 2020. I hadn't known a lot about the person that the story was about. His name was J.D. Vance, and apparently it was a story of his growing up and his family. Some time ago when I was watching a movie, I referred to it as a really good case study, and that just kind of stuck with me. It sounds kind of strange, but the idea behind that was that sometimes a movie can be really weird, and I mean that in the sense that the characters can be really weird. Like either the family's kind of off or like as a couple, they're kind of strange, but it makes a really good case study. So in other words, it's almost like a train wreck. You can't look away because the characters are sort of dysfunctional and you're like, what the hell are they thinking? But it's really enjoyable to watch because it's true life. At some point, somewhere, you know that there are people that are functioning just that way. There's a lot of movies I've thought that about. One of them is called The Florida Project, which is another one with Willem Dafoe, which is really good. I'll speak about that in another episode, but Sid and Nancy is another one with Gary Oldman, another one that I'll talk about in another episode. But the point is, I don't necessarily relate to those characters because they're completely dysfunctional, and not when we watch movies, we always have to relate to the film for it to be good. But I often like to say, the movie itself was a little bit off the beaten path in terms of being believable or relatable, but the characters were really interesting to watch. That's the main overall summary I'm trying to get at with this. This was one of those films about family and growing up, and as people often say in movie reviews, a coming of age type of story. So I appreciated that the author, J.D. Vance, whose life that it was about, was very protective of his family, and he was very defensive of his mom, who made some bad choices, but you know, he really was defending her and defending his childhood, and that was kind of touching as well. I noted that Glenn Close and Amy Adams both did a really, really good job in their respective characters here, and it was one I would watch again. The next film I'm going to talk about is one called A Jazz Man's Blues. This one is a Tyler Perry film. It's newer. It came out in 2022. It's rated R and has a runtime of 2 hours and 7 minutes. There's innumerable amount of times in history in films that we've watched things collectively as a society that have made us uncomfortable, or things that are parts of history, parts of a family story, parts of a married couple story, whatever it may be that we're watching the film about. But I try never to discount or throw out those kind of films. I always try to watch them if there's merit in it, because just because something's disturbing does not mean it's not an accurate representation of real life, of the past, true things in life, whatever it may be. That being said, there is some disturbing things. Overall, I felt like the movie has good merit. It was a well-told story. It was one that I was very interested in. I always enjoy when I start a film with less expectation and then I end up leaving the experience of watching it with more expectation. So if it surpasses my expectation and I'm left thinking, wow, I really couldn't look away the entire film, that's when I know something's really good. And that's how I felt about this one. Even though it has, you know, some disturbing parts and it is a bit upsetting, I will say that, I felt like it was really something that just hooked me from the moment I started watching it all the way to the end. So it was a good experience in terms of being a very well-paced movie. It had a good story throughout. There are some things that, you know, you view it and it'll make you shake your head. But this is probably one of my favorite Tyler Perry movies I've seen so far. There's quite a few of his I've not seen, but I am a big fan of this one. So this one I'm going to pull from the IMDb summary so I don't give away too much of the plot. It starts with an investigation into an unsolved murder that leads us into a past and a story full of forbidden love, deceit, and secrets. The last one I'm going to recommend today is one of Netflix's original TV series that happens to be actually one of the best original content series off of any of the platforms that I've seen. And this was surprising because it was a show that I actually didn't even want to watch in the first place. I felt like it was one that was for certain people, for fans of her music, for people that were there at that time and place, that kind of thing. But it really transcended all of that. It really surpassed all of my expectations. And this is the one called Selena, the series. This one aired in 2020. It's rated TV PG. And it was split into two seasons. The first season had 9 episodes, and the second also had 9 episodes. And each one was about 40 minutes. And again, I'll tell you, I was surprised that I was able to stick with it for 2 full seasons. But it really didn't get boring. I didn't lose interest. It really kept up momentum. And when it was over, I felt like they had really concisely and thoroughly told the story of the Quintanilla family. So this was not only about Selena Quintanilla, but about her family and the very close relationships that they all had and the rise to fame for her and her brother and sister, but also, you know, just as a family, their collective issues and things that they faced from the time that the kids were children all the way into her superstardom. I remembered seeing advertisements for the series and thinking, oh, I don't know that I'd want to watch a whole series about that. But oddly and randomly enough, what made me come back across it was I was thinking about the movie Twilight. In one way, it's kind of fun because it's a never-ending rabbit hole. I go back to movies I've seen and I think, have I ever seen that actor in something else? And in particular, in this case, I was thinking about Twilight and how it sort of took the pop culture world by storm, such as a lot of the acting cast in that film went from being completely anonymous to overnight sensations. So the books were really popular, but then the movies added a whole nother layer to that because people were sojourning by the thousands to Forks, Washington, so they could get a look at all the sights from the movie. It became a very popular pop culture destination. There's even a documentary about it. And a lot of these young actors had huge social media presences, and they were doing press junkets, and they were doing Comic-Con conventions, and just all kinds of things. So they were really everywhere there for a few years. And a lot of them after that kind of faded into obscurity and dropped off. Some of them went on to do other things, but it made me curious if any of those kids had the acting chops to really go on and do anything notable after those films. Obviously, some of the more notable actors, Robert Pattinson, Kristen Stewart, Taylor Lautner, they went on to do several other things after Twilight. But I was more curious about the high school kids, and by that I mean Justin Chan, Anna Kendrick, Christian Serratos, Michael Welch, and Gregory Tyree Boyce. Michael Welch played Mike Newton, Justin Chan played Eric, Anna Kendrick played Jessica, Gregory Tyree Boyce played Tyler, and Christian Serratos played Angela. So most of them really didn't go on to do much. Anna Kendrick was probably the most successful of this group, going on to do several other films after this. But I was particularly interested in Christian Serratos and seeing if she'd been in anything else, because the boys actually really hadn't done a whole lot after Twilight either. So when I found out Christian Serratos was the one who was going to be playing Selena, I thought, okay, I'm really interested to see if she has the chops to pull this off. And I will say I was happy to be proven wrong. Like I said, once I started it, it was very engrossing, very captivating. I did not feel bored. I found it to be one that I was able to very easily get into. Christian Serratos, no surprise, does a really, really good job. She's very easy to watch, and she's a really good actress in this. So I was happy to see that she got to do something where she was more than just a little minor character. So I'd seen Christian Serratos, obviously, from Twilight. That's the only other thing I'd seen her in. But the other main role that was really impressive to me was Ricardo Chavira's performance as Abraham Quintanilla. I feel that he already had big shoes to fill because Edward James Olmos had played Selena's father in the Selena biopic that I had mentioned a couple episodes ago with Jennifer Lopez. So he had done such a good job as Abraham, I thought, wow, this is going to be a really hard act to follow. But I really liked Ricardo Chavira's performance in this, and a part of that was probably because I felt really familiar and comfortable with him. Feels like kind of an old friend because I'd spent so many seasons watching him in Desperate Housewives. And Desperate Housewives is an older ABC show, but it's one of my favorites. I remember rewatching that one several times the years after it came out. So going into it, I knew Christian Serratos from one other thing. I knew Ricardo Chavira for one other thing, and the rest of the cast was complete mystery. It was completely fresh, new eyes, new talent, and they all were really good. So it was enjoyable. I think their two performances obviously stood out to me because they were who I knew. They also were the main most important, I think, of the series. But overall, it was just a really good show. I've also started to notice that I'm really enjoying what I call time capsule pieces. It's not an official name for them or anything. But I'm starting to really like things that are capturing a time and place, especially if it was something I was around for. So even though obviously I wasn't in Texas and where she was really big and where she was from and stuff, I still knew who she was. And I remember the stories of her in the newspaper and on the music awards and all those kinds of things. So it does feel like nostalgic and for something that I can remember. And I really tend to like series that do that. And now obviously my generation, we're in a group where we can kind of remember some of those things and they're being made into movies and shows. Kind of like Pam and Tommy on Hulu. I watched that and absolutely loved it. It was totally reminiscent of the late 90s. And so Stuff like that is kind of fun to look back when you've been there and you were like, oh, I remember that. Or I remember how people dressed, or I remember how it was to walk around the mall in the late 90s, that kind of thing. As mentioned at the beginning of the episode, all of these are Netflix originals. They can all be found on Netflix. Hope you enjoy these if you decide to watch them. That's all for this week. And until next week.